Blog Talk Radio.
Don S. McClure, and this is the Don S. McClure Show. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this special and exciting one-hour show. If you'd like to call in and share some comments, you can call 818-691-7395. That's our call-in numbers. Again, the number is 818-691-7395. That is the number you can call to get into our show. Or you can IM me at McClureDonS@gmail.com or McClureDonS@yahoo.com. And you can send me an email after the show at McClureDonS@gmail. I'd like to take a moment to send a special thanks to Madeline Gleason. She is my support operator for Blog Talk Radio. I could not do my show without her help. I mean, she's always on the help board, answers me right away, and takes care of a lot of ideas or actually information that I need. And I want to send a special hello to a great friend of mine in the great state of New Jersey, Margie Flores. She's been a wonderful supporter and friend, and I just wanted to say I wish her a great evening. I keep forgetting we're there on Eastern Time, and we are on Central Time. So this is Don McClure. We're going to open the show today. We're going to talk about four African-American governors, how they are very important to the growth of the African-American community, and some of the things that they've done and things that we really, really need to know more about. We're also going to play an interview from Governor Deval Patrick, the African-American governor in Massachusetts. We want you to listen to his take when he was talking about health care and how the state of Massachusetts was going to deal with that. So right now, we're going to take a quick break, get you ready for the show. I'm Don S. McClure, and you're listening to the Don S. McClure Show. So after this PSA, we'll be right back, and we'll be ready to start.
This is Chicago-style hot dog here. I'm not feeling too good. Turns out, along with all the other bad things my cholesterol does, they say it's a risk factor for strokes. Strokes? Sheesh. Good news from National Stroke Association. Exercising, eating right, and asking your doctor about medicines that can help lower your cholesterol, like statins, may reduce the risk of a first stroke. And if you've already had a stroke, it's even more important you lower your cholesterol.
Lower your chances of stroke by controlling your cholesterol. Visit stroke.org today.
Hello?
Lisa, it's Janet.
What's wrong?
This is the bridesmaid's dresses for Lindsay's wedding.
Oh, no. Tell me they're not fuchsia.
Oh, they're not fuchsia.
Then what? Oh, they're gaudy, aren't they? All ruffles and lace. Great. Well, look at the chorus line.
No. They're really quite simple. It's the material I'm most concerned about.
Oh, I knew it. I specifically said no chiffon. I mean, it's so passe. I just don't think...
It's not chiffon.
Then what?
They're made out of old yellow pages.
What? I didn't catch that. It sounded like you said they're made out of old yellow pages.
Yep. I'm afraid you heard right. It's got something to do with recycling and good karma on her wedding day.
Oh, that's special. I'm not going to know whether a guy's checking me out or just looking for the number of a good mechanic.
Funny. Very funny.
There's a better way to recycle your outdated Dex phone books. Find out just how easy we've made it in your neighborhood. Call 1-877-2-GET-DEX or log on to DexKnows.com.
And you're listening to Don S. McClure on the Don S. McClure Show. I think we have a caller early. Somebody's calling from the 803 area. Let's see what they would like to talk about. Good afternoon, caller.
Hello, Don. This is Robin, just calling in to listen for the first time.
Oh, well, thank you, Robin, and I really enjoyed your show. This is Robin Foster, ladies and gentlemen. And I
Yes, it was really great. I've had really great responses and enjoying listening to your show now and excited about the topic tonight.
Well, you're going to get an earful then. We're going to be traveling along the road of the very first African-American governor for the United States all the way up to Deval Patrick. So sit back, relax, and you're going to enjoy the show. And, again, I really enjoyed being on your show. And I put
that
on Facebook.
All right, thank you.
All right, have a good one.
Thanks.
All right, we're ready to start talking about African-American governors. One of the things that's important on my show, we try to bring you up to date so that you can use information and get yourselves involved in what's going on in today's world and help progress, help bring us to a whole new dynamic level. I was watching one of the Tyler Perry films, or actually one of the plays, and I was just intrigued at his ending when he talked about how nobody really helped him, but he kept going on, and people that could have helped him didn't. And now he's a great producer, I mean, doing some really great things in the black community. And he said something that was very important. He said that now that he's made it up to this gigantic level, he's able to employ people. He's able to give people jobs. He's able to search out new talent. And I want us to think about that. Every time that we buy a book from an author, every time that we support a black restaurant, every time that we support anything in the arts that's African-American based, we're creating more revenue, more jobs for us. So those are the things that I like to put out there, I mean, because these are the things that's going to help our community grow. So when you're out there getting some books from another author or you're buying books off my website, you're actually giving us a chance to grow, to do better things in our community, and to help others. Now, one of the first governors, his name is Pinckney Benton Stewart Pinchback. And he became governor in 1872 on December 8th. And he stayed in office for 35 days. January 18th, 1873, he left office. But the amazing part about the African-American governors, he was one of the first lieutenant governors to succeed the current governor and take office so that he could run things for a temporary state, but that he could put things together. Now, you got to look at the dates. We're talking about 1872. He went to Strait University. He served in the National Guard. And the amazing part is he was born in Macon, Georgia, on May 10th, 1837. Now, this is a man that got his early education in the public school systems of Cincinnati, Ohio. He later studied law, Louisiana, and in 1886 was admitted to the bar during the Civil War. He entered politics in 1867, serving as a delegate to the Louisiana Reconstruction Convention. He also served as a member of the Louisiana State Senate from 1868 to 1871. And upon the death of Lieutenant Governor Oscar Dunn in 1871, Pinchback, who was president of the Senate at the time, assumed the duties of the lieutenant governor's office. And he served in that capacity until 1872. That's when the impeachment charges of Governor Henry C. Warmoth. He was removed from office December 8, 1872, and Pinchback, who was lieutenant governor, assumed the office of the governorship. Now, what's so important about this, even though he served for 36 days, a month and a couple of days, he became the first African-American to serve as a United States governor. And during his short tenure, he created several appointments, was granted, and created 10 legislative bills that were sanctioned. After leaving the governor's office, Pinchback was elected to the Congress, but he was denied a seat to sit in Congress. And that's because, again, there was a lot of racial disharmony in our country. But in 1879, he served as a delegate to the Louisiana Constitutional Convention. 4 years later, he was appointed surveyor of customs for the Port of New Orleans. He also was involved in founding of Southern University, where he served for several years on the Board of Trustees. In his latter years, he moved to Washington, D.C. and practiced law. Now, why are we saying all this? Because for the simple reason is education is so important in guidance in the black community. And if we can get people to see that they're going to need to be involved with a strong educational background, whether they work in the community, whether they get involved in public affairs, for their city council, they have to get involved so that people can become aware of them, so that they, if they decide to run for office, like Pinchback was lieutenant governor, then he became the governor. And he knew that he had a job to do. And what was amazing back then, he took it upon himself to say, this is something I really, really need to be involved in, is the political process. And yes, he was part of the Republican Party. But the issue was he wanted to change things for Louisiana. Now, some of you are probably saying, well, that was back there then. Well, the second person to become governor was Governor Douglas Wilder. Now, he's born in Virginia, and you hear me talk about Virginia a lot, especially with Maggie Walker being there. But again, now, he's part of the Democratic Party. He went to school at Virginia Union University. He went to Howard University, and he served in the military. Wilder was born in Richmond, Virginia, and he earned his bachelor's degree in chemistry. Now, listen to what I'm saying to you. He learned his bachelor's degree in chemistry in 1951. He earned his law degree in 1959 from Howard University School of Law. He served in the United States Army in the Korean War, and I know most of us are too old or too young to even remember the Korean War. But if you think about it, this man had a Brown Star, went on to do a lot of great things, and he was elected to the Senate in 1969. He served until his election as lieutenant governor, again, another person becoming lieutenant governor, in 1985. He was elected governor in 1989 and served from 1990 to 1994. Wilder was the first black American to be elected as a state's governor. Now, we got to go back and forth with the differences in being elected and being appointed. Pinchback had to succeed the office because that was the law, so he became governor. But Wilder was the first voted-in governor, African-American, in Richmond, Virginia. And most of us should know the history of Richmond, the Civil War, the things that took shape in Richmond, Virginia. So when you look at that, those are great strides. And I want our young people to listen and say, wait a minute, these guys served the country, went to war, went to law school, had good, solid foundations on education, and kept continuing to break the racial barrier, to get involved, and wanted them to become the first elected governor in the history of the country and also Virginia. Now, Wilder, in 1991, he actually went out for the Democratic presidential nomination, running as a centrist. But, of course, it didn't work. He failed to raise enough funds, which is what we're going to talk about later. You've got to be able to get some good fundraising efforts. But from that race, in 1992, he was barred by state law from seeking a second consecutive term as governor. He left the office in 1994. And he became a professor at the Center for Public Policy of Virginia's Commonwealth University in 1995, still being able to mention and do things in the political process, still throwing his hat in and his comments. So just because you don't win the office doesn't mean that you stop trying to be involved in what you feel can be a better enlightenment for your state, for your people, and to do a lot of great things that you believe you can change the course of history. And that's what I want to keep pointing out to people. When you get involved, you're actually changing the course of history because you're getting people to see some new things that they need to address and deal with. That's why I'm always telling people, get involved in your community. Get involved in the PTAs and the PTOs and things in your schools. Guide your young people to say, listen, you need to be involved in things early. Don't wait until they're 18, 19, 20, 24. Start them off when they're 10. If you can get them to do it when they're 7 and 8. Because that's what's going to help them get a stronger structure. Now we're going to get to Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, phenomenal black man from Chicago, Illinois, my home state and city. I think that when you go after things and you have all these role models that maybe you didn't know, but you need to look up, you can look at their path. Now, Deval's born July 31st, 1956. He's born in Illinois. He's a Democrat. He attends Harvard College Law School, and he continues to be involved in the political process. And the funny part about it, again, he comes to the Commonwealth at the age of 14. He was awarded a scholarship to Milton Academy through a Better Chance, a Boston-based organization. Now listen to what I'm saying. At the age of 14, he gets a scholarship to Milton Academy through a Better Chance, a Boston-based organization. We've got to get more involved in our local organizations who may be able to send our young people to other cities to be involved. I remember talking about my granddaughter leaving her city and going to help the unfortunate in another city. These are the things that's going to help balance them. So when we talk about curfews and things that they're being involved in, they wouldn't be involved in just being outside late. If we got them involved early, understanding the political process, understanding the professional process as far as getting a job is concerned, and giving them the guidance to help them think about owning their own companies. I mean, I always talk about me being at that Burger King last week. Well, there's a black woman in Milwaukee that at one time owned, and I think she still does, 137 Burger Kings, more than anybody else in the United States, Valerie Daniels Carter. So we have the ammunition to go on to be something. But after graduation from Milton, Patrick went to Harvard. He was the first one in his family to attend college. He received his degrees with honor. And in 1978, spent a postgraduate year working on a United Nations youth training project in Darfur, the Sudan in Africa. Now, we're looking at a young man who's now trying to be involved with the United Nations, something that we don't tell our children a lot about, how the United Nations even functions. We've got to get them on this young path of saying, why can't we pretend to be the delegates of the United Nations? Why can't we pretend to be the delegates of the Organization of African Unity? It was called the OAU in 1963, when 31 African presidents came together to write a basis of structure and harmony in Africa. Well, now it's called the AU. But are we really telling our schools we want this kind of thing going on? I know in college at Rhodes, they have a mock tribunal for the UN. Why can't we have a mock tribunal for the OAU or what's called now the AU? The reason why we don't have those, because we don't see the importance in that. But I guarantee you that if you guide your young people to start learning to speak better, to get into debates, to think about maybe working for the UN, they won't have time for a lot of the things that they've been doing, standing on corners, having children too early, not attending school, because we're not guiding them. We do have some. It's not like we don't have any. But we need more. We need more to get involved. We need to make them sit down and listen to radio programs that have a lot of things going on. Deval was so involved that in 1994, President Bill Clinton, who we all know, appointed Patrick the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, the nation's top civil rights post. Now think about that. We all talk about civil rights during Martin Luther King. We all talk about it when we see the movie Mississippi Burning. Here's a man that Bill Clinton, who a lot of us admire in the African-American community, appointed him Attorney General for Civil Rights. We're going to take a quick break. I'll be right back. This is Don S. McClure, and you're listening to the Don S. McClure Show. So don't go away. Get your pads and pencils. Take some notes and send me an email or two. I'll be right back after this PSA.
I never thought it would take over my life. I never thought I'd lose all my friends. I never thought I'd steal from my mom. I never thought I'd start dealing. I never thought I'd go to jail. I never thought my kids would be taken away. When I started using meth, I never thought I'd lose it all. I was a really loving kid. Family was always number one. But after I started using meth, my sister told me she was worried about me. I even ruined my mom's wedding. My uncle wouldn't let me near his kids. My best friend wouldn't talk to me. I ruined every relationship. I'm still trying to get my family to trust me again.
Meth can take it all away, just like that. For more information, visit methresources.gov. Sponsored by ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Well, we're back, and this is Don S. McClure, and you're listening to the Don S. McClure Show. And we're talking about African-American governors. And we're actually talking about the role that the governor plays in your state. I'm just really amazed that in over 200 years, ever since 1776, actually when you do the math, let's go back to Pinchback for a minute. We're talking about a man that became governor later after attending a lot of things, going to law school, being admitted to the bar, and getting involved, and watching another lieutenant governor pass while he's in office, and then he becomes governor. So we're looking at this, and we're saying to ourselves, okay, but that was Pinchback. That was back there then, and what's going on now? And a lot of us, when we think about it, when we say, so who is Deval Patrick? This man was really instrumental because even though he became the first governor, African-American, in Massachusetts, we got to think about the city of Boston. Let's just say for whatever conversation's sake, if the first African-American, Crispus Attucks, is supposed to be the first person to die for the United States in that area, and years later, after the Boston Tea Party, we get an African-American governor who a lot of the states are watching to see what his health care reform is going to do in that state. And this is a man that came from Illinois. Now, before we play his tape, we want you to think about your state. And you don't have to agree with what he's doing. You don't have to agree at all that that's going to be a good health care plan. But to know that he's trying to address an issue, that if you stand up and vote and say, I agree or I don't agree, I want my state to adopt that, and we're not paying attention to where health care is going in our states. But to give you an idea, this man, being attorney general, during his tenure, Patrick led the largest criminal investigation prior to September 11th. Now listen to what I just said. Patrick led the largest criminal investigation prior to September 11th, coordinating state, local, and federal agencies to investigate church burnings throughout the South in the mid-1990s. Now, I always thought about church burnings back in Mississippi Burning and stuff and things like that, but when I'm looking at this and thinking about this information, here is an African-American saying, I want something done about this. He returned to private practice in 1997. with a Boston law firm, Day, Berry, and Howard. And that same year, he was appointed by a federal district court to serve as the first chairperson of Texaco's Equality and Fairness Task Force. He also was hired by Texaco in 1999 to serve as vice president and general counsel, leading the company's global legal affairs. And in 2000, he joined the Coca-Cola company as executive vice president and general counsel. He was elected to the additional role of corporate secretary in 2002 and served as part of the company's senior leadership team as a member of the executive committee. Now, that's a bio that almost every African-American child needs to know. Because we didn't start really learning a lot about Patrick until he became governor. But this man is in Illinois. This man was working for one of the largest corporations in the bottling industry, Coca-Cola. This man worked for Texaco, Bill Clinton. I mean, look at his resume. We want our children and our children's children to think about, how do I build my resume? How do I get it so that I can get to those kind of jobs? That's what I'm talking to you about. Trying to get you to listen to say, how young do we start grilling them and grooming them and making them see that the future can be brighter if they work hard? It's going to pay off, and they're going to have some obstacles. But guess what? We will have greater leaders. Instead of just having Oprah and instead of just having Tyler Perry and all the producers that we've got out there, when are we going to get 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, doing the same great things? I mean, these people are leading the way by doing great things. But we need more than one or two or three. We need the floodgates to open for all the talented people out there to start making that $100,000, $200,000, and act like that's nothing new. They should be making that anyway. And it shouldn't just be in sports. It should be across the board, especially in our political field, because that's what controls our economy in our cities, the local governments. The governor's office plays a huge role. So we want you to sit down and listen to what Deval Patrick was talking about with health care. And I'll be back after you hear this interview with Governor Deval Patrick.
Hello, this is Nancy Fernandez-Mills, Communications Director for Governor Deval Patrick. Welcome to the Governor's Weekly Podcast. Governor, we had news this week that the group known as the Connector, the agency managing key parts of our health care reform package, voted unanimously to require drug coverage as part of their proposed rules for our universal health insurance law. Is this a step in the right direction?
You bet it is. Prescription drugs, Nancy, are basic medical necessities relied on for preventive care, helping patients with chronic conditions and other treatments. Making them part of our coverage is right in line with our goal of keeping people healthy and cutting costs at the same time. We've come a long way in implementing health care reform. Our budget proposal fully funds the next phase of changes. We have coverage plans through the Connector that offer good prices, provide preventive care and prescription drug coverage, and protect our citizens from healthcare-related financial crises. And the Connector will connect insurers and with individuals on even more affordable prescription drug plans. I believe we can offer prescription drug coverage at prices that are affordable to everybody.
Governor, how long will residents have to comply with our new rules that require everyone to have health insurance, including the drug coverage?
Nancy, that's important. It happens in stages. The basic rule is that starting July 1st of this year, most everyone will need to have some form of coverage that is allowed on the market today. But the Connector is in the process of establishing new standards that we believe will provide better, more cost-effective care, including requiring prescription drug coverage, as we just discussed. We'll be giving people until January 1st of 2009 to find a plan that complies with those standards. In other words, throughout the remainder of this year and next year, people will meet what's called the individual mandate to have health insurance if they have any insurance product that's starting in 2009, They'll have to have insurance that meets a new, more comprehensive floor, if you will, which includes having prescription drug coverage.
Governor, why was this phased-in approach taken to setting basic standards for the health insurance?
Nancy, a phase-in makes sense. People who have insurance today can't necessarily change it overnight. Many employees have to wait for their re-enrollment periods, which may be staggered over time. Some businesses provide coverage that works for their employees, but that doesn't include prescription drugs. We want people to have the chance to learn the new requirements and the time to make adjustments.
And then, Governor, what happens if someone doesn't get the right coverage? Is there actually a penalty?
Well, individuals who don't get coverage by the end of this year will lose their personal income tax exemption. In 2006, that exemption was worth about $200 per qualified person. Next year, they'll be fined for insurance, and the fine will be half the price of the lowest cost premium. But the point is, we want to make sure that everyone who can afford coverage is paying so that they're not relying on expensive emergency room care and the free care pool that costs taxpayer dollars. It's important that everyone pay their fair share, and we're working hard to make sure we get the numbers right for everyone so that there is an affordable product in practical terms for everyone.
Governor, I've heard that certain individuals will be able to get a waiver if they feel they can't afford even the lowest cost plan that we end up with. Who might be eligible for a waiver?
This waiver is really important, Nancy. Some people may be exempt from the mandate if they can't afford any of the available plans that meet the minimum standard, no matter how much work we've done to get those prices down. And so the connector will be working on spelling out those kinds of exceptions from the individual mandate starting in early April, and helping to make those exceptions as practical and as reasonable as possible.
Governor, will there be limits on the annual benefits that connector-approved plans will offer or on payments for any specific disease?
There are no limits on annual benefits or on benefits for any specific disease. And that will be the general rule for all plans held by Massachusetts residents starting in January of 2009. We want to make sure that everyone has the full protection they need and expect from their health insurance policies. We also want to make sure that no one pays more than they can handle, either on a month-to-month basis or for expensive medical procedures.
Governor, are all these new standards for health insurance coverage final now, or will there be more input from the public?
There will be more input. These are recommendations from the Connector Board and only the beginning of the process. We'll be holding public hearings across the Commonwealth in the coming months so that we can hear the ideas and concerns of local residents. We are considering every need. Input from the business community, from health advocates, from individuals was critical to getting us this far and developing the recommended standards, and we've got to keep that alive and continue to encourage that input over the next 2 months and beyond. With that information, the connector will adjust and refine their regulations. Its board is scheduled to vote on final standards in June. We're working with the connector board to approach this very important task with great care. We don't want to force people to buy health insurance that's going to empty their bank accounts. At the same time, we absolutely want to bring new people in to protect them against financial catastrophe in the event they get sick, or to bring the young, healthy people into the system whose participation will make health care more affordable for everybody. It's important to be prudent and candid as we move forward. We have to focus on what works and what doesn't, to try things as we go along. I'm committed to working with the Connector Board, with insurers and caretakers, large and small businesses, and everyday people, so that we can generate reform that serves the best interests of us all. And I want to hear from all of you out there. Feel free to send us your ideas on this or any other issue on your mind. Thanks again for tuning in.
Thank you, Governor. Before we close, I want to remind everyone that we're looking for your questions to ask the Governor. Please go to www.mass.gov/governor and use the Contact Us form to submit your question. Thank you, and we look forward to hearing from you.
And we're back. This is Don McClure. Now, I want a lot of you to think about that. Even though that's Massachusetts, how often have you heard something go past your head or past your ears, or somebody's talking about the political process and how it affects us, and we'll say, that doesn't have anything to do with me. I just want to get my job. But it actually does. Every day people are making laws and deciding on your future, and you're sitting there saying it doesn't make a difference. We keep hearing all the time people saying, I don't want to vote, and people, it's hard to get voter turnout. Well, the reason why is because we keep saying the same thing. Sure, there were people that paved the road for us, and yes, we need to respect the ones who passed, who gave their lives so that we could vote. But it's a lot larger than that now. We do need to give them that honor, but we need to know what's going on inside the governor's office, the mayor's office, and the attorney general's office, what we can do to change our lives and make it better, because I'm telling you, the more we be informed, the more we stay informed, the better we are in our communities. If we only allow everybody to constantly go to Washington or constantly go to the governor's office or the state, our legislature, our congressmen, and not challenge what they're doing, we're just as guilty as saying it doesn't matter. So all those people who died for us to be able to vote, we're just saying, well, that was then, and the black man doesn't have any place, and the black woman's not getting anywhere. But you have the time, the talent, and the wherewithal. The more you learn, the more you can challenge that system. If you listen to what he was saying, they're going to look for ideas. And we need to go back and research, did the connector work? I took a look at that, and I need to do some more research on that. And it goes even down to education. The governor controls what goes on in your state concerning education. You say you want a good education for your children, then start early. Because if they can debate the principals, the teachers, the educational system, even the educational union should not have a free rein over our destiny. So the more you learn, you may be able to change those things. We're going to take a quick break. This is Don S. McClure. You're listening to the Don S. McClure Show, and I hope you're enjoying it because I'm learning a lot myself, and I'll be right back after this PSA message.
This is Chicago-style hot dog here. I'm not feeling too good. Turns out, along with all the other bad things my cholesterol does, they say it's a risk factor for strokes. Strokes? Sheesh. Good news from National Stroke Association. Exercising, eating right, and asking your doctor about medicines that can help lower your cholesterol, like statins, may reduce the risk of a first stroke. And if you've already had a stroke, it's even more important you lower your cholesterol.
Lower your chances of stroke by controlling your cholesterol. Visit stroke.org today.
Hello?
Lisa, it's Janet.
What's wrong?
Oh, it's the bridesmaids' dresses for Lindsay's wedding.
Oh, no. Tell me they're not fuchsia.
Oh, they're not fuchsia.
Then what? Oh, they're gaudy, aren't they? All ruffles and lace. Great. We'll look like a chorus line.
No. They're really quite simple. It's the material I'm most concerned about.
Oh, I knew it. I specifically said no chiffon. I mean, it's so passe. I just don't think...
It's not chiffon.
Then what?
They're made out of old yellow pages.
What? I didn't catch that. It sounded like you said they're made out of old yellow pages.
Yep. I'm afraid you heard right. It's got something to do with recycling and good karma on her wedding day.
Oh, that's special. I'm not going to know whether a guy's checking me out or just looking for the number of a good mechanic.
Funny. Very funny.
There's a better way to recycle your outdated Dex phone books. Find out just how easy we've made it in your neighborhood. Call 1-877-2-GET-DEX or log on to DexKnows.com.
And we're back on the Don S. McClure Show. If you want to get in and give me a call at 818-691-7395, the call-in number is 818-691-7395. This is Don McClure, and we're talking about African-American governors and actually the power that the governor has. I would love to turn around and see a lot of young, bright African-American females saying one day, writing me emails saying, you know what? I want to become the governor. I even want to run for the office, if it's possible, for the lieutenant governor. I would love to be the attorney general. I would like to hear a lot of young women say to me, I want my corporation to employ thousands upon thousands of people, and how do we do that? I was talking to a friend of mine, and they were asking me about some situations that they had with African trade. And I remember a man in Memphis named George Dobbins. He started doing trade with Africa, and he was bringing in African fish and selling it to Kroger. It was an African perch that was really good, but his daughter became the head of his company later on. George died, but his daughter was also in the telecommunications business. This was a sharp young black woman. I have seen us grow by leaps and bounds, becoming instructors. We just need to let the general public know that they're out there so that their names don't lie dormant, so that everybody can stop scratching their head saying, I don't know. Have we done that? You know, the worst thing in the world is to have people stand on a podium and say, African-Americans don't read. Or if you want to hide something, put it in a book. And then what's even more foolish is when we give credence to a letter like the Willie Lynch letter, and we swear that black people are against black people, and the young are against the old, and the old don't like the young. If you breed negativity, you're going to get negativity. And that's what Tyler Perry was talking about in this last thing that I had a chance to see. He said, you know what, if you surround yourself with positive thoughts, you'll get positive results. And that's the thing that I want to point out to people. We have a lot of great young people and people of age. You know, when we talk about governors, we've really got to talk about David Paterson. This man is born May 20th, 1954 in Brooklyn. Now, he earned his bachelor's degree in history from Columbia University in 1977, and he completed his J.D. at Hofstra Law School. But Paterson is amazing because he was the first non-white to become the Secretary of State in New York. And we all know how big New York is and how we talk about New York. And he was the first African-American vice chair of the National Democratic Party. And we didn't learn about Paterson until he became governor. A lot of people, because we think that if they're in Carolina or if they're in Illinois, what difference does it make to us? It's kind of like they do in Africa. I was talking to some people, and they were telling me things that go on in Kenya, and they live in Tanzania, they don't think much about. But I'm saying you have to, because it's on the continent. Well, in 1985, he was elected to represent Harlem. Now, we've all seen the movies Harlem Nights. We've all heard of Harlem in New York State Senate. And in 2002, he became the minority leader of the New York State Senate, again being the first non-white legislator, leader in New York's history. I mean, this man was really doing some things. So even though he's considered legally blind, he becomes the governor after Spitzer. Again, he's one of the governors who succeeds a governor. Instead of being appointed, he's in the office, but he's a lieutenant governor. And one of my research specialists was telling me that they believe that Steele, the gentleman that was in the Republican Party doing some leadership, actually used to be a lieutenant governor. We're going to research that and see. But the point is, we have more people than Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, the president's wife, Mrs. Obama. We got a lot more than that. And if we can just get the young people to say, I want you to pull out 10 people, not the ones you've heard of, 10 people that have achieved some great things, 5 from the past and 5 from the present. And I'm telling you, you will be amazed. And ask them not to do the same ones that everybody else has done. Tell them to start picking something else. And you will find that they will come up with some amazing names and things that we could sit down and say, I didn't know that. I didn't know this. I'm really proud that every time that I get together with some of my associates, we talk about things that I didn't know, things that they didn't know, things that we learned together. And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, I put those kind of things in my books. So if you go to my website, www.dsmpublications.net, and order that music CD from St. George, you will be helping me build something phenomenal for African Americans' communities and for African Americans themselves and to represent our cultural history. I would love to have a company that we have different people going around working for us, doing the radio shows, producing things. Like Robin's show, that was a good show. My sister's show, that was a good show in Iowa. And there's other shows. we have to become more vigilant in doing some things. You know, in my last book, Romantic Images of You, Where My Heart Belongs, I called a certain section daydreamers. So let me read you the passage from that. I thought it was really great, and actually I got a lot of comments from it, a lot of good comments. I said, are daydreamers different from regular people? Are they the ones who create the songs we live by or we play to fit every emotional situation in our existence? Are daydreamers the people who create the imaginary stories we grow up with that Hollywood brings to life in a film filled with adventure and, of course, danger, and last but not least, with a villain we all love to hate? Are daydreamers those selected with a higher connection to God and his thoughts? Or have they lived among the gods on Olympus and decided to come to Earth disguised as mere mortals with just plain ordinary jobs? Do we truly know if daydreamers are those who built the empires that fought and changed the world from the beginning of B.C. to the end of A.D., never giving an inch to color, race, or creed, only changing with time who should lead and who should fall from one dynasty to another? Can daydreamers be responsible for the very fall of Rome or for the first emperor of China, helping him create the great wonders of the world, the Great Wall, or the other images of the terracotta? Or did they dream up the city Rosewood, where blacks enjoyed a life that of successful that others envied? Are daydreamers responsible for the tallest buildings or the longest bridges? Or can it be said that daydreamers sailed with the first explorers and wrote the maps that provided the adventures for the search of the Northwest Passage? Do daydreamers work with us each day in some small corner of an office building, just looking out the window at the sky and wondering if they can fly like a bird? Or do we find them tucked away with round-shaped glasses in the basement of a home or company, just drawing images for comic books or three-dimensional children's stories or for the latest science fiction movie complete with aliens from other worlds, maybe a super dog to stop the invasion? Are daydreamers the greatest lovers of all time because they use their unlimited imagination to take a lover to places she or he has never been before? Or could she be that girl who you see each day as the plain, inexperienced young lady, but she comes to the office party with the sexy short skirt and her hair hanging down like you've never seen before, with heels, makeup, and lipstick that would make the best models in the room take notice, and your eyes catch her image at a glance, and you want the opportunity, once she is introduced, to ask, have I met you before? Well, the next time you think of daydreamers, just ask yourself all of these questions, and who knows, you just might be one yourself. I think that, to me, we can all find out if we're daydreamers. We can continue to build this world as a better place. We can learn from a lot of people, like the gentleman, Mr. Patterson. We need to respect that. He made history in 2004 when he became the first visually impaired person to address the Democratic National Convention held in Boston, Massachusetts, again back to Boston. And he was elected New York's first African-American lieutenant governor on November 7th, 2006. So it's not good for us just to pay attention to the election when President Obama runs. We need to figure out what's going on, what's going to be good for us. And we can change things. We can change our lives. We can change our children's lives. We can do more. You're listening to the Don S. McClure Show. And, of course, I'm Don S. McClure. And I'm enjoying the show. We've got 10 more minutes left. If you'd like to call or email me, you can call me at 818-691-7395. That's the number to reach me. Or you can send me an email at McClureDonS@gmail.com. And I think that when you write me, you can ask what you'd like for me to do a show on. I mean, I get so many listeners, And I'm really glad that my show is growing. We're traveling across the country. We've told a lot of people we're going to be in Charlotte September 23rd and 24th, and we're pushing one of our clients out there, Miss Flo's Bears. I mean, she's a dynamic woman who has a teddy bear company, and it's online. I built her website. But I want you to go to www.dsmpublications.net and order some of those books that I've created so that you could share with people who Don McClure is. And we're going to start a new representative program, making sure that people get some benefits out of promoting that book, Broken Wings, Fallen Angels. And, yes, I'm on Amazon and I'm on a lot of other websites, but I want you to go to my website because there's information there that the others don't have. That's www.dsmpublications.net. Ladies and gentlemen, I always enjoy my shows. I mean, I can't get enough research in to talk to you, to bring to you, to let you know that we're trying every day, every hour, every second, to provide you with good information so that you can make a better life for yourself and that we can have a better community. There's no sense in saying we can't do it. There's no sense in talking about what had happened. And there's no sense in talking about the spilled milk. We all know about slavery. We all know that. And we should study those things. But we should not let those things take control of our communities and take control of our minds. We can change the world, just like these gentlemen did. They became the heads of state. And we need to honor that. And then if we don't like what they're doing, challenge that. There's nothing saying you can't challenge the governor. There's nothing saying you can't challenge the mayor. There's nothing saying you can't challenge your city council. You do not have to agree with everything they say. And I want you to do some research on your own. But you're listening to Don S. McClure. And this week, we're talking about African-American governors all the way back to when the country first got started up till now. And we need to get more than just 3 or 4. 200 years is a long time, but having 4 African-American governors, we should have a lot more than that. We've got to get people to start thinking about becoming governor and how to do fundraisers and what to do. And we're going to be talking about a lot of that stuff in Charlotte. Somebody called on Robin's show and they asked me, when was I coming to Florida? As soon as I can get 36 to 40 to 50 people saying I want to come to a lecture, we'll be in Florida. I'm willing to travel the country to go over there to spread this goodwill about building us up stronger and better than we've ever been before and honoring the past. There are other people out there just like me. There's other people sitting at home saying, you know what, I can make a difference. We can mentor more. We can produce more. We can be involved. I remember one of the mayors that I became good friends with in Gary, Indiana, which is a city that has a lot of problems. But he had created a walkie-talkie system where he had shipped those walkie-talkies to Nigeria, Africa. And they were using those walkie-talkies on the bus system. I mean, there's a lot of things going on out there. Do your research. Get involved. Create your own radio show, blog talk radio. But put your information out there and provide others with stimulating conversation. It's okay to talk about the movies and the shows and the dancing and the partying, but we've got to be really serious about who we want to lead our city, our state, and even our presidency. We've got to get more involved and don't sit on the side saying, okay, we have President Barack Obama. We've got to get more than that. I would love to see an African-American female become the first female president of the United States. I would love to see somebody take over and say, you know what? I am now chairman of the board of Coca-Cola. I mean, we have some great vice presidents and presidents, and we've worked our way up. But to have a black woman become the president of a bank over 100 years ago, and we not follow that up, making us stronger and dominant because our financial stability is important to our community. We got 5 more minutes for the show. I'm enjoying it. And I like departing information, and I'm learning something as I'm talking to you. I'm definitely going to do more research on Deval Patrick and Mr. Patterson. I do want to know more about these gentlemen. I want to know what they thought, what they think, if they wrote any books that I can get a hold of. We're going to build better libraries. I want to build a family library for our family so that we can learn more about our grandparents and the people that actually started these generations that we're all so proud to have the last names of. But this is Don McClure, and we're broadcasting live. So if you've got anything you'd like to ask me, you can call in or write me. I always get emails and IMs after I leave my show, so I like that. But it's putting information out there. We have to do that to become better. We have to do that to make everything much better for our young people and push them, demand that they become the next real leaders of our community. We're going to take a quick break before our 4 minutes is up. We'll be right back. This is the Don S. McClure Show.
This is Chicago-style hot dog here. I'm not feeling too good. Turns out, along with all the other bad things my cholesterol does, they say it's a risk factor for strokes. Strokes? Sheesh. Good news from National Stroke Association. Exercising, eating right, and asking your doctor about medicines that can help lower your cholesterol, like statins, may reduce the risk of a first stroke. And if you've already had a stroke, it's even more important you lower your cholesterol.
Lower your chances of stroke by controlling your cholesterol. Visit stroke.org today.
I never thought it would take over my life. I never thought I'd lose all my friends. I never thought I'd steal from my mom. I never thought I'd start dealing. I never thought I'd go to jail. I never thought my kids would be taken away. When I started using meth, I never thought I'd lose it all. I was a really loving kid. Family was always number one. But after I started using meth, my sister told me she was worried about me. I even ruined my mom's wedding. My uncle wouldn't let me near his kids. My best friend wouldn't talk to me. I ruined every relationship. I'm still trying to get my family to trust me again.
Meth can take it all away, just like that. For more information, visit methresources.gov. Sponsored by ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
You know, one of the things that I enjoy about radio, and we got 2 more minutes before my show goes off. Every Friday I'm on, 7 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock Eastern, and even in Las Vegas at 5 o'clock. Being able to disseminate information is so important, and I'm glad to be a part of that structure. And if you've got a city or a state you want me to visit, send me an email, and we'll try to make arrangements to get there. I know Florida's going to be on our agenda. Of course, my hometown, Chicago. And I plan on going to New Orleans, where my mother was born. Louisiana's a big state in my history, and I want to know more about that. And more than just Mardi Gras, I want to go there and learn more about where this great family of mine started. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bring my show to a close. It's almost time for me to go, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. Again, I've been seeing my ratings go up, and I want to make sure you get to that website of mine, www.dsmpublications.net. You will enjoy it. We're going to have some new PSAs coming up for you soon and some new information. So I'm going to say what I always say every Friday, enjoy life, because that's all you have.